Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
On Friday, October the 24th, the Norris Group proudly presented its seventh annual award-winning black tie event, I Survived Real Estate. An incredible lineup of industry experts joined Bruce Norris to discuss perplexing industry trends, head-scratching legislation, and opportunities emerging for real estate professionals. Proceeds for the event benefited Make-A-Wish and St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital. This event could not have been possible without the generous help of the following platinum partners: Auction.com, Housing Wire, Property Radar, the Apartment Owners Association, the San Diego Creative Real Estate Investors Association, and President Bill Tan, the North San Diego Real Estate Investors Association, Invest Club for Women and Iris Veneration, Wholesale Capital Corp, New Western Acquisition, MVT Productions, and White House Catering. For event video and information, visit isurvivedrealestate.com.
Well, I'll talk to, okay, the builders. I mean, the builders have to look at that demographic all the time because they probably have to say, okay, we have a chance in Florida, let's say, to build senior projects. And I know that I'm looking at those projects and they're two-bedroom with two master bedrooms. They're intentionally building that type of thing. So,
well, yeah, I think there's a number of factors, obviously, that drive that, and they're both personal and I think economic in many ways. But people want to be close to their children. They want to be close to quality health care. Many folks have retired from positions that where they are on a certain health care plan that, you know, is only exists in certain locations. So that's an important decision that they make. Many of them do downsize, certainly, but we're seeing a lot of areas where you've got people that are relocating from parts of the state where they were able to sell the home they've owned for 30 or 40 years for a huge amount of money, moved into an area where the housing prices are considerably lower, buy their dream home, bank a considerable amount of money to aid in their retirement years, and retire early in many cases, earlier than what they planned to. So we've certainly seen pockets of this develop throughout the state where you're close enough to these, whether it's the Bay Area or Los Angeles or what have you, where people can make that decision and move and not only benefit from it economically, but in many cases get closer to the kids that have had to move out of these areas in order to find affordable housing.
I wasn't really going to ask this question, but the company that I own pays for insurance for its employees. And when I look at the bill and I look at the coverage, you know, I don't think when you fill out a loan application, I don't think you have a back-end debt ratio that's affected by your insurance premium. But I'm wondering if it doesn't dawn on you that you now have a bigger responsibility than ever for that cost should it occur, because the deductibles are higher. And I don't know if anybody's ever, you know, if we've really put a number to this, but I would think it would certainly dawn on people, you know what, I'm responsible for the first $6,000 or $10,000 out of pocket. It's got to be a consideration because it can turn into almost another house payment.
Yeah, I think I think most 20 years ago, 10 years ago, when you sat down, and we do business in 20 states, so we represent not the entire U.S., but most of it. When you sat down with a consumer 20 years ago, it was, you know, what am I qualified for? And if they didn't like the number, they wanted, you know, $50,000 more, they went to the next lender, right? Everybody wanted to max out what they can qualify for, and if you didn't give them the number they liked, you stink, and they went to the next lender who told them what they wanted to hear. I think today we're seeing that the consumer of all ages, all demographics are much more conservative than they were before. And, you know, I think obviously it has a short-term effect on the market that we're speaking about this evening, but I think long-term it's probably good. For the housing market and good for the markets. But there's no doubt that the health care is a big issue, just like other things. But the health care is definitely a big issue.
Okay. We've got about 15 minutes left. I'm just going to ask everybody to answer three questions, one at a time. Major concerns for 2015 for your industry?
Well, our industry, certainly in the state of California and nationwide, a lot of issues relating to the cost to build, the time it takes to get entitlements. But this state is a poster child for that, certainly. It takes longer here, costs more. Development fees of all kinds continue to increase. One of the biggest threats we're looking at right now, we've had a very successful public-private partnership in place for 16 years in this state, SB 50, that created the public school financing mechanism, which is basically a three-legged stool, if you will, where you have local bond issues that provide a portion of the revenues necessary to build schools. You have developer fees that cover a portion of that, and then the state school bonds that cover a portion of it. And over the last 16 years, that program has built something like $34 billion worth of schools in this state, and has met about $11 billion a $1 billion a year, almost $16 billion impact to the home building industry by having that program in place. And it's something that was put in place back in 1998 as a result of years of a lot of litigation and fighting between builders and school districts on, what the fees were to be and what the impacts of those were. So without that program, and right now it's out of money, there needs to be another school bond. We've passed four in this state since the enactment of SB 50. But without that, we're looking at a potential of at least a doubling of the fees that builders currently pay for schools in this state, and that's anywhere from $10,000 to $30,000 per home in many cases. And it could actually get worse than that, because if it's determined that the program, SB 50, is no longer viable, then we can go back to the bad old days, if you will, where school districts just put all of it on top of the builder, and it can just be prohibitive in many parts of the state. There are certainly areas where you can pass through just about anything, but there are many parts of this state where it really will become a feasibility issue and builders won't be able to build homes.
Okay. Thank you. Gary.
For California, which I'll,
sure,
because we're all here in California, I think the biggest issue that I would think would be facing the housing market here from a resale standpoint would be point of sale legislation, anything having to do with taxation, trying to fix the infrastructure system by putting, lumping things onto, housing. I think, I would agree. I think, they've got to come up with the money someplace. And my fear is that they would try and look to our industry to do it.
Okay.
I would think for the mortgage banking business, and I'll do this just quick, consolidation. If you look at last year, it was about a $1.1 trillion market. It was last around a $1 trillion market in 2000, so statistically, 14 is going to come in as low as it's been in about 14 years. That's a long time. If you look at the height of the market in 2003, was about $3.7 trillion. Anything below a 1.7 to 1.8 trillion is generally a slower market. So when you look at a 15 being maybe a $1.1 to $1.2 trillion market, there's still too many lenders out there, whether there's still too many mortgage entities chasing at $1.1 trillion, not enough loans. So I think the mortgage business will consolidate. And that's my, for me, that's the biggest concern.
Okay.
The Fed has a very tricky future, and their balance sheet is about four times as large to the general economy as the average of the last 40 years. They've said that's too big. They haven't told the markets exactly how that's going to get smaller yet. So it raises a risk, which we think is a relatively low risk, But there is a risk that the markets could react when they start restoring volatility by driving up inflation expectations, and you could see a rapid rise in rates. And the market did exactly what we expected last year when we had a rapid rise in rates. The first thing that happens is sales fall. House prices don't fall. They slow, but they typically do not fall. And in the past, when you've had that kind of environment, what happened was there would be a spike in adjustable rate mortgage applications. But two things are different. In the past two time periods when this happened, 1994, 95, the average 30-year fixed rate was about 8.5%. So you could reasonably expect on the other side, rates might fall again. So you could refi out of that arm. Then in 1999, 2000, the average 30-year fixed rate was about 6.5%. So again, you could reasonably expect you could refinance out of that and avoid the payment adjustment. But today, unrealistic to expect rates would fall. And we changed the rules to underwrite ARMs so that now you have to underwrite them to the maximum rate to which they can reset in their first 5 years. So you've right. taken away affordability tool if rates were to rise rapidly because bond markets expected inflation.
Okay. Thank you. Sean?
Yeah, you know, I think kind of where we are in the cycle, right? So the end of 2013 looked a lot like the end of 2005. And this year, in terms of sales volumes, with prices still going up, beginning of this year looked a lot like 2006, with prices still going up and volumes flat and then volumes declining. Now, for all of those out there that are panicked that I'm saying it's like 2005, 2006, I'm not. We don't have pay option ARMs in the market, and I think prices are relatively okay where they are. So I don't expect, you know, a big decline. I don't think a 10% adjustment in price would be a bad thing for sales volumes, right? It wouldn't be necessarily a good thing overall, but it wouldn't be a bad thing for sales volumes. Still, I don't really expect that to happen. We are seeing our first declines in price in about half of the major counties in California right now, which kind of makes sense with the slower volumes and rising inventories. So I think it's possible we'll see some price declines next year, but I think we'll be largely stagnant, unfortunately. Fairly low sales, fairly low price. So the thing that always concerns me most, and I'm always thinking about in the back of my head, is what is the next black swan? Because, you know, as Nassim Taleb, if I pronounced that right, said, you know, the one thing we should expect is the unexpected. Right. And what is that?
The trouble with a black swan is, what did he say? Retrospectively, they were obvious. Okay, but you can't see them in advance. It's great.
I can't see, yeah. I have no idea what it would be, but and I don't see one right now. And I think we're going to have a relatively flat, you know, market, a market that, you know, investors can still make money in if they're smart and work hard. Realtors can still make money in, but it's not going to be a boom year.
What struck me about now that we're in October, was we didn't have follow-through because when I looked at the end of 2013, I mean, that was a pretty positive year, and all of the last, say, 3 or 4 months were slower than the beginning. But usually momentum carries the day, and people aggressively do something off of that momentum and creates more. And this time, that didn't happen. That's my problem. I look at it, okay, historically, you look at price increases from 74 to 80, 86 to 90, and so forth. They build momentum. They don't lose it. So when I heard the reasoning, well, we take a pause. Well, it's not what we do as human beings. We usually add on to what just happened because we just got an exciting result by touching one of them.
There's an income story there, though. Right. And that income story is that the people that are the general transactors, the first-timers, and the middle-income households have not seen the income growth. So when rates rise rapidly in a short time period, the only way you can, if you don't have an affordability product to carry you through, then you have to see real incomes rise at a pace that offsets the larger mortgage payment at the higher interest rate, and you did not get that.
Are we referring to the higher interest rate at 4%?
Well, but it's what matters.
It's all relative, of course.
Yeah, what matters is where you go to and from, not
the underlying level is. Correct.
And how fast.
What I'd want to add to that is, you know, I think what you saw in those past cases was as you saw those increases in price, what you saw along with that, besides, you know, the income issue is also the financing terms.
Right.
Right. So, you know, mortgage industry, like they did in 04 to 07, they did it in the past, too, is as the market got better and better, they kind of bought into that, started drinking the Kool-Aid and started making looser and looser loans. And that, I think, fed those, you know, price increases as much as anything else. The fact that we still use the sales comparison approach to appraisal, where if any three idiots overpay for a house, that's what they're now all worth, is, you know, still a fundamental problem. And so you get that chasing the market kind of situation in those upturns. We don't have that this time because of the regulatory environment that we're in.
Well, that's one of the things, you know, we were invited up to Washington to be part of a panel, and it was a room full of billionaire hedge funds. And I really think that they're going to be running out of the product. Looks like let's loan to real estate investors. I mean, they're going to be only so many people with 50 houses to refi. And I think they could serve a really good market function and do safe loans by doing stated income loans to an occupant. Only that pile wouldn't start with a B. That could start with a T. And it could have a very significant impact by being a replacement or an additional financing piece. And I think they'd end up with a very safe pile of paper.
The key to it is it stays at the top 10% of the market and doesn't trickle its way down to the middle class. And I think that's kind of what's in play. As I've gone to Washington more than ever before, you have the regulators where I think for the first time, the regulators are truly looking at each other and looking at themselves. And I think they would, I'm not putting words in their mouths, but for the first time you get the feeling that they believe or see the fact that maybe there's been an overcorrection. Right. And they see the fact that the markets are not performing the way they expected them to. The recovery is flattened out and they're concerned about that. It's public knowledge now, so we could talk about it. 2 weeks ago, a group of us was in the White House and the administration was asking us, why is the recovery flat? That's exactly what they asked us. You guys are laughing, but it's actually a good, it's a hell of a lot better question than the ones we've been getting the last 4 years. Right? So it's an improvement. For us, it was exciting to hear because for the first time, the reality of what we've been telling them, I think they're starting to see it. So when you talk about what happened at the MBA convention with the announcement from FHFA/Fannie and Freddie with the 3% down, when you talk about Secretary Castro's comments, when you talk about the rep and warrant relief that Director Mel Watt mentioned a couple days ago, you can see the attitudes change with the regulators. The regulators are now, I believe, starting to bring that pendulum back to center because they see that the lending community is not opening back up, and they thought it would. So in that sense, it may sound crazy, but there's something to be excited about there because I think for the first time, the regulators are working with the industry better with the credibility we've built back over the last 4 years.
Should we be getting in the Kool-Aid business then?
Not yet. Okay. Not yet. It's a day-to-day thing, but I do think that is something to be it's something to be encouraged about.
It would be really nice to see our politicians swing the pendulum back based on common sense rather than crisis. But my guess it'll be crisis that swings the pendulum back.
And the crisis will be that the building industry can't be a participant in the economy, or
prices start to fall and, you know, there's a problem in housing. I mean, I'm hoping that doesn't happen. I think we're going to see a stagnant, fairly stagnant market here in the near term. But I think
based on affordability?
I think we're at the affordability limit. You know, you talk about affordability using the California Association
right.
of Realtors chart, and we
right.
hit this really low number, and we should go back to there. The problem is we hit that really low number not on the loan terms that they use to calculate affordability. they were still calculating affordability based on a 30-year fixed mortgage with a relatively regular interest rate and all the rest.
Well, we hit it in 89. We hit it repetitively. So
we hit it with easier financing. We hit it with financing that was easier because of adjustable rate mortgages, interest only, and the ultimate pay option arm is how we hit those low inflation numbers. We have a market now that is a 30-year fixed market. That affordability number you're seeing is actually a real one. Look back in that chart. It's not a real one.
Well, I'm not saying you're not correct, but if you are correct, then we are at a market peak, and that would be good news to know.
No one.
Okay?
Yeah, no.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that I agree with that, by the way, but in other words, what Sean is saying has got some validity. If the only reason we ever showed up at 17% affordability was every time there was Kool-Aid drank by everybody to get there, including every time in the 70s, the 80s, and so forth, there were lending policies that accommodated that monthly payment to aggressively go down.
70s, you get adjustable rate mortgages, then you talk about interest-only loans. I mean, there is those products in every one of those periods.
I would expect that to replicate unless it's completely forbidden.
Well, if I was an economist, I would say that the difference this time, as Doug said, you don't have the wage growth. You don't have the wage growth.
Okay.
And I think that's the, you know, to me, when we sit in front of applicants, that's the missing piece. To have the market continue to go upward.
Is that likely to change? I mean,
you're the smart guy. Tell me.
Well, there's a comment there that I'm going to pass.
You're the damn doctor.
The last few months have started to show real wage growth. But if you compare where we should be to where we are, that's the right direction. But we have a long ways to go.
Plus, when you get more wage growth, you're only allowed to use a certain percentage of that at a front end ratio. So you can get one heck of a raise and not materialize into much of a payment.
Yeah, and I think equally important to all of the regulatory changes is the impact on the risk profile that mortgage lenders are willing to accept. The issue of judgment has been removed. I've talked to a number of the folks who are members of the MBA that have been in the business for a long time, and they all tell you, and these are people that are invested in their communities and things like that, that what's different for them is there's 5 or 10% of the loans they will not do that they would have done 10 years ago based on what they know about the family, based on what they know about the business community, where that person is in the business community. They'd have taken a chance on them because they believed they could make it.
Right.
Thinking about that, sort of how they started. But today you don't make those because you get punished regulatorily if anything goes wrong.
I think Dodd-Frank has, in its current form, has forever changed the mortgage markets. There's no doubt about it. And again, you could take that top 10% that's non-QM that the banks are just going to make to their high net worth clients. But if you take that aside, Dodd-Frank and CFPB has forever changed the psyche of the mortgage banking business.
Well, with that, we will call it an evening. Thank you for coming tonight, and thank you all for your participation. It's been a valuable night.
The Norris Group would like to thank its gold sponsors for supporting I Survived Real Estate, Adrenaline Athletics, Coachella Valley Real Estate Investors Association, Caldwell Banker Town & Country, Costa Mesa Marriott, Council of Multiple Listing Services, Elite Auctions, In a Day Development, Inland Valley Association of Realtors, Investor Experts, IRA Services Trust Company, Jennifer Buys Houses, Keystone CPA, Las Brisas Escrow, LA South REIA, Vievis Tax Wealth Management, Personal Real Estate Magazine, Pilot Limousine, Primary Residential Mortgage, Northern California Real Estate Investors Association, Real Wealth Network, Realty 411 Magazine, Rick and Leanne Rossiter, Sunoco Corporation, South Point Companies, Spinnaker Loans, Tony Alvarez, UDirect IRA Services, Resident Lens Photography, and SJREI. See isurvivedrealestate.com for a video of the live event and more information.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.